Accession number 20259, Reel 4.
Jim Burns, Reel 4.
And it took us just over 6 weeks to get to Busan. But on the way there, of course, we had to stop at different ports. The first one was Jib, to take on Bolton Pood. Then Aden, Singapore, and 3 days out of Singapore, in the Chow Town City, we hit a typhoon, which was very uncomfortable for us because they had to be in a big old ship and the screws were racing, so they had to cut the engines and everything was battened down. And unfortunately, the time that we were battened down there, the dysentery had broke out on the ship, so there was one continual queue of lines to the heads. And the smell wasn't too bad until when they actually opened up the hatches and the air came in, I think. But we kept busy on the ship. We rigged up machine guns on the back of the pit for practice. Let the rifle companies kept the garbage and they threw it over the side of the ship so that they could take pot shots and sort of things. And then they went to sort of what to do if you're wounded and sort of thing, what you mustn't do, what you can do, you know. Like if somebody's really bleeding badly, you can put a tourniquet on, but for goodness sake, you can't leave it there and go off and do something else, because it needs to be slackened up again, otherwise the flesh or whatever it is would die, you know, so didn't get any blood to it. And we learnt all these sort of things, and it was only then that it came back. I mean, when they were saying they were going to have talks and medical talks and everything, everybody thought, oh, you know, they're going to go on about pox and all this, that and the other, but I mean, we'd already had that at different stages in the regiments, you know, with MO talks and things. This was more, you know, what to do on active service. And then we arrived in Busan. And as we arrived into Busan, there was a great big lovely boat, all nice and white, with a big jazz band playing on the top deck. And it was some American forces that were going back home. And so, and we came down, and as we came down the gangplank to form up on the bottom, it was all the Korean children, and they got baskets of fruit, and they were given an orange, and we were given an orange and an apple, and they were bowing to us and saying such words of in Korean, you know, greeting and it worked out, you know, that Korean and welcome United Kingdom forces, and we're happy that you are here to help us and sort of things. And then we moved across to another pile to tables, and we collected sandwiches that were wrapped up in greaseproof paper, which consisted of a cold egg fried egg sandwich and something else, some chocolate and things. And then we got the train, and we all jumped on the train, and it had open carriage doorways, and everybody got on their kit bags to be stowed on the top or put them on the floor and put your feet on top of them. And every entrance had to have two guards with a rifle with 10 rounds in the magazine. And off we chugged, and it was more, you know, it's basic sort of wood seats and or slats sort of thing, and it was cold, and so we got our overcoats on and everything, but it still didn't keep the cold out. But the thing that got me is we were travelling along at such a pace that every so often you'd hear a lot of children on the shouting, you know. But what they were asking for was chocolate or food or anything, you know. And of course, we'd only been going for about maybe an hour when the first lot of children come up, because everybody was throwing all the chocolate out to them and everything. You didn't have anything for yourself, you know, even the sandwiches, you know, and you never thought. But you did the next time, because they did carry rations on the train that came through. But they said, you know, this, you're going to get this now, and this will be the last you'll get till, what do you call it? But we were hours on that train, as it's a people wanted to take the turn on guard at the team because you could, where the doorway, it was just a couple of steps down. At least you could jump up and down and keep your feet warm, you know. Whereas the rest of us are all packed in. You had to sit in there or sitting on a kit bag or something. You couldn't move because there was that, you know, many people who could get in that wagon got into the wagon. Because all the other sort of ones, the only spare place was for all the stores that were, you know, the equipment and stuff that we carry with us. And then we suddenly pulled into somewhere just before we got to Seoul, can't remember the area. And then we picked up trucks there, and they took us to a kind of a holding bay behind the lines, a rest area, I think they called it. Well, what it was is it's going to be the final sort of battle preparations and sort of things that what was going to happen. You know, we're going to go into the line. We'll go in the line at last light. You can't move during the daytime because of observation from enemy things and sort of things. And we got issued with some new sort of warmer clothing as well, and some head things to cover your ears up. And we moved in into the line last light, and we were taken over from a Canadian regiment, and being with the Vickers, being support company, of course, we carried our guns and we carried the tripods and everything else with it. But when we were moving into the bunkers with the machine guns, of course, the Canadians were coming out, and all they got with them was the gun. See? So we're saying, well, you know, where's your tripod? Because I'm going to put my tripod in there. No, he said, you give me your tripod. I said, well, it goes with this gun, you know, got the number on, sort of thing. You don't bother with that here, lad, you know, sort of thing. He said that tripod there is bedded in. He says, and all those sort of marks upon you see down there, they're all targets. He says, you just put your gun on that tripod, look at that, say you want Yong Dong. He said, you look at Yong Dong, you tap him over, and you're on. Because the thing is, with a Vickers machine gun, you have a dive sight for night firing. And also, what you aim on is what they call an aiming post. And the aiming post, you put 15 foot in front of the guns. And at night time, you have a lamp on it, like a bicycle lamp, so you can see the light. Well, the thing is, if you're on a hill and you put it 15 foot out, of course, it has to be down. It'd be down in the bottom of the hill. You know, you would never see it. Because the thing. So what they did, somebody came up with this idea that what you do, you get your lamp and you put it on the back of the bunker, and you swing your Lanzatic sight round, or you swing the dial sight round 180 degrees, and you use that lamp there, your gun's still facing that way, but you've got your Lanzatic sight, and you tap your gun round so that the Lanzatic sight is dead on centre of the aiming lamp, and of course that's giving you your range to the front, so everything had to be done 180 degrees back, so you actually doing it at the back there, 180 degrees, if your sight was the right way around, it's coming out the target where the aiming post would be, but head down the hill. So, you know, let's see. We didn't get any of this sort of information until we actually got there, you know, and it's a, but luckily, I think, it was a quiet period, and we were on Yong Dong at the time, which is kind of west from the hook. Anyway, we settled in there, and all the rifle companies, of course, the thing was, we got the bunkers, the guns have to be set up first, the ammo, everything like that, and then you find your bunker, which is about 15, 20 foot away from your gun pit, and make yourself a home there, you know. Being in support company, especially with the Vickers machine guns, of course, what you do get is plenty of belts, because the belts, it's webbing belting that all the bullets fit in. when you fired a belt holds 250 rounds. When you fired 250 rounds, you've got a spare belt there, and there was plenty of picket line steel pickets that you could use to make it lime down, and you could wrap the belts through it and make yourself a little bed instead of sleeping on the floor. Because I mean, winter time, and the thing is, it's cold anyway. But and the other sort of thing that you've had to learn, being the vickers and whatnot, in the middle of winter, is because you set your guns up, you're always there first light on manning your guns. You're always there last light manning your guns, and you stay there till the thing, till the patrols go out and all this, that, and the other. And of course, you're there when there's any action needed. And but when you come back to your bunker, you've got to take the lock and the feed block out and put it inside your jacket to keep it warm so it doesn't freeze up. Otherwise, you know, you get in there, you find out the whole damn thing's frozen. And the other thing was that because it's water cooled, they decided to put antifreeze into the barrels, which kind of worked, the sort of thing. But the disadvantage was that once you were on firing, and especially rapid fire, because the Vickers machine guns fires 250 rounds a minute normal fire and 500 rapid fire, and of course the barrel heats up, and of course you've got all this acrid smoke and sort of thing coming in, and so bad that your eyes were running, you know, and sort of thing. And in the front of the guns, of course, we have an apron or blanket, which is wet. I mean, in the winter time, you don't have to wet it because it's the snow and the rain does that. But that's so as to hide, so that the enemy can't see where the... I know we've got blast deflectors on the gun as well, so that the enemy can't see where the fire's coming in from. But, of course, having that cover down, and the antifreeze all heats up. Oh, it was terrible, cough and choke and sort of thing. You know, you have to keep running out and getting a couple of bolts of air. But if you're on a shoot, well, you know, you've got to stick with it. You know, try and pull your cap comforter down as near as you can, or something like that. Or get the number two, the number three, and number four, or somebody. You know, kind of try and disperse the all the smoke that was coming out. And then when you finish firing, of course, you know, the sort of things that, you know, during the daytime, it was always, you know, your gun's got to be in tip-top order. You know, it's got to fire every time and all times. So, you know, it's all cleaned up, the ammunition's all brought up. But then while we were on Yongdong, which was November 52, the Black Watch were on the hook. I think their CO was a Colonel Rose. But he'd taken over from the Americans, and the Americans had said to Colonel Rose, or supposed to have said to Colonel Rose, you know, I tell you, Limeys, you won't be here tomorrow at this time on here. He says, oh, these Americans, what you call it, said that, you know, they'd managed to hold it at terrific odds, sort of thing. But then, because Colonel Rose said, when he got there, because the usual sort of things with the Americans, I know it's rock and sort of things like that. There was some earth in different places. But the Americans, when they go sort of held something, all they do is just scoop enough out of the ground to lie down and fire. You know, and that was when Colonel Rose said, you know, if this is going to be a strategic sort of position and we've got to hold this, it needs to have trenches and it needs to have, you know, we already had bunkers on Yongdong, but not for the guns, and there was bunkers for the people to live in, but the actual people on the front sort of line was just where you laid, and kind of the lower you could get, the less chance of being shot. So, I mean, that wasn't acceptable to the British Army. So the engineers and whatnot came in, and it was a full-time, you know, digging in and wanting another, which served them well, because as I said, this time, November, the Chinks attacked Black Watch, and we were covering them from Yongdong, and it was rapid fire, continuous rapid fire. The mortars were going, the anti-tanks had gone, because you couldn't hump anti-tank guns up them, the sort of hills they had in Korea. So they formed up with the assault pioneers and people like that in support company. And the sort of the support that we were giving them, and one of the problems that we come was because we were rapid firing, of course, the ammunition that we'd already got in the bunkers was being used up rather quickly. So then we had to go further down the hill to where our second store area was to take from there the liners, the ammunition. And they come in boxes, and there's two liners with 250 bullets in each liner in a belt. And what we were doing, because we were raiding our reserve stock down here, then of course further down the hill we had to ring up to get ammo parties to come up and start replenishing what was down, because we didn't know how long the thing shoot was going to go on. And of course there was drumming shells coming in, and different chinks, you got some sort of mortars going and things like that. And so the funny thing, wherever you went, you took your own personal weapon, which is a rifle. Number one's on the machine gun, you'd carry a Sten, or somebody, you know, number two, or same on the mortar, like that, where you went. So it meant that if you're going to back to get the ammunition, instead of trying to carry a box, a tin box with two things in, you open the box and take the two liners out with 250 in each hand. So you have your rifle over your shoulder, around in each. Well, the problem was that you needed your hands free to use your weapon. So the idea was that you get a belt and you tie it around your shoulder and tie it on the two ammunition liners.
Don't stand up.
Oops, sorry. On the two ammunition liners. So that when you stood up, it bounces on there. You could have your rifle in this hand ready, and you could also support this one to stop that one riding up. You'd keep hold of it. Well, it was on this sort of occasion where something went off, bomb, mortar or something, that I was lifted on that. And the trouble is, what happened to me, you see, the trenches are only just wide enough to get two people through. If you've got ammunition on each side of you, a box of ammunition and a rifle and sort of thing, trying to go through, well, from where the ammunition dump was, it's cut into the hill, into the back of the hill side. So from where you're standing here, you get your ammunition. It was as easy to stand on the top and just jump over the trench, because it was only about 15 foot to the gun pit, see? So that was the route I took. But then something went off and I was lifted, and I finished up down in the trench. And I don't remember a lot about that, but the lads had come back and picked me up and put me in a bunker, and I reckon it was a couple of days before I actually could think straight to see what was going on. Because, of course, if anybody goes down one thing or another, then, you know, you need to know where they've been hit or what is, you know, have you broken this, have you done that, have you done this, you know. But if you, all right, and what it was is concussion. But you don't need to have concussion, because if you're there and there's enough sort of explosions going on, you can't focus your mind, because your ears have gone and sort of thing. You know, people shout and you can see the mouths moving, you know, but you can't hear them because, you know, but it'll come back to you later, you know, once you've calmed down. But I was on my way to hospital in Japan, Kyuri Hospital. And
was this November?
Yep. And I went to Curie Hospital, and I went in there, and they'd done my knees for me. And I came back, and I got back to the battalion for Christmas, and they were still in the line, but we were kind of on a reserve sort of pitch by then. The Black Watch had held out and everything, and I know that they took a bit of a hammering. And I think the worst thing that I can remember about that was that the next sort of day after the battle, they collected all the wounded and people like that, but then of course you've got kind of limbs here and something there and things like that. But the engineers come, because they're going to have to rebuild the trenches and the bunkers, because they've all been thrown in. And what they do, they throw all this lime in. And the lime, it doesn't matter what you drink or what you eat or anything, you can taste this lime. Everything you eat tastes of this lime, and it's kind of a I can never describe the taste, but if you got it in your eyes, you'd know about it. Or your mouth, but just the smell of it. But of course, they built the things up again. And I do believe, I'm not quite sure, but the following time that the Hook took that, the third battle of the Hook was when Arbitalin was on there. And of course, everything was blown in, out, and upside down. But then they'd opened up some of the old sort of trench work and earthworkings and whatnot, and found some of the bones of the Black Watch people that were there the year before. But of course, they were stripped of all flesh because that's what the lime does and sort of things. But, you know, I mean, it couldn't have been any valor because it was only newly, you know, the battle was only new or sort of thing. But then we came out into the line for rest. We'd stopped in for Christmas. I remember we got, because we were living on American K rations, sort of things, and he got these packets, and it used to, the only thing that nobody seemed to like was ham and lima beans. You know, we used to throw them over the side there. And of course, we used to get English cigarettes in 50s, you know, 50 tin of Players or Woodbines and sort of thing. Somebody did manage to get some packets of cigarettes sent up to the Duke of Wellington's because they knew that lads from Yorkshire liked them Park Drive with the cigarettes, and that was just kind of a special sort of treat that the tobacco companies or the Nappy had done for it and one thing or another, because when it came up, they came up in packets, and people, you know, there's only so many, and someone would say, cool, I'll give you a tin of 50 Players for a packet of Park Drives, sort of thing, you know. And also that Christmas, we come up and they got a sort of tradition sort of thing, you know, sergeant from somewhere, from one of the sections, or the cooks had worked it out, coming up with a bucket of tea with the rum in it, you know, coming down visiting all the things, because everything was quite done. Thing was, the winters are so bad there that you couldn't really get out on patrols and whatnot. If you went out on patrol at the height of winter, quarter of an hour, and then you had to be start coming back. So you can imagine you can't go far out there. So, you know, you just stayed in the weapon pits on the front, kind of kept your eyes open for anything moving there. And if anything moved when the snow was out, you could just pick them out. Except the Chinese, when they come to their attack, they're all dressed in white. And they come out at night time and they get down in the snow. And we couldn't do it, but they could. You know, they have this K-pop sort of uniform on that seems to keep them warm. I mean, we got all sorts on, but we're still cold. And that's how they managed to catch the catchers on the Hook. Because they'd come up to Greenfinger, and there's caves under Greenfingers, and they'd come up at night time and hid under the caves, you know, until they were all in there and all the ammo and everything they wanted for the attack. And of course, that's how they caught us up, because we man first thing in the morning and last light, or first light, last light, and sort of thing. If there's anything going on, of course, you man your guns all the time or your positions, and you got patrols going in and out. But say in the winter time, you can't do that. But I mean, their attack came in May. So you can imagine that what they've been statching under there, you know, during those cold winter months. And, of course, they've got a great big arsenal of weaponry and stuff under there. Yep. So, the next time there was an incident was another sort of blast or something, but what had happened was it hit a 40-gallon drum of diesel, which was 98 octane, which was for the tanks, because we had a couple of tanks dug in on the Hook, and this is their fuel replacement. And of course, the blast caught me, and I thought I'd just got the diesel into my eyes, but apparently I got some other sort of blast things in there, and I finished up in a MASH hospital just south of Seoul. And the unusual thing about, I got bandages on, so I couldn't see. and I was classed as walking wounded. And I had a chap, an American, that used to come and collect me and take me down to what they call the chow line. Well, all the Americans line up for the food and one thing and that. And it's funny, you know, it's a war-torn, a war sort of situation. The hospital's not far away from the front line. And everybody's queuing up there for the meals, and they've got the cooks cooking it and things like that. And yet you still have an American military policeman there to keep order, you know, because me being with the bandages on and my American chap who was looking after me, he used to say, come on, Limey, you know, take me down the front, sort of thing, you know, to the queue, so I didn't get mixed up with all that lot charging in. But...
So your eyes were damaged, brother?
Yeah, no, I got pads on them at the time. They were just on put them to settle down or something. But when I got to the counter, and then of course I realised afterwards who it was a great big Negro at the back who was a cook. And what he was saying to me, it was breakfast time, what he was saying to me, he jabbered on about something. I remember him say, well, he says it the same to everybody, but I didn't know what it was, and my escort said to me, how do you want your eggs? What he's saying, easy over, flap side, top side, sunny side, or how do you want them, you know, the sunny your eggs. So I said, well, I just want an ordinary fried egg, see? So he said, oh, you want a couple of sunny sides, so he put them on a tray for me. Then got some bacon and some kind of toasty things. But the Americans, their trays, there's a tray with about four different compartments, a big one there for that and one for this and one for bacon or something. But then when he come to the end, he said, you want some of this, what do you call it, on it, on your thing, you know? So I said, what is it? He says, well, it's maple. And I said, oh, well, I'll try a bit. Well, he put it on the bacon, you know, because when I'm starting to eat, I said, oh, what the hell, you know, you put syrup on this. And it says, well, that's what it is, maple leaf syrup. But they have it on everything. Even the potatoes, you get the potatoes and put it on because, you know, by the time when I got my bandages off, I could see exactly what was going on all round. But anyway, my first time in the MASH hospital, and I'd gone in there and I was concussed again because I got my bandages on my eyes and I couldn't see what was going on, but there was a hell of a lot of action going on, and I thought, well, it was mostly all the wounded coming in because there was helicopters, you could hear them lifting up and coming down and all kind of chatting this, that and the other. But actually there was an officer in there who was dying. And I think he was a colonel. And officers in the American sort of things, if they're going out somewhere, this, that and the other, there's going to be some sort of action and sort of bravery and one thing and the senior officers, they carry so many sort of medals with them or in a case or something to give, you know, give somebody a decorations in the field sort of thing. As you just get nominated there and you get them about 2 years later. But this American, there was a general coming in who was going to give him a decoration, a high one. Well, it wasn't the Congressional Medal of Honor because I don't think a general can give that. I think it's only the president that does that. So it was probably a Silver Star or something in that sort of region. Well, what was happening before this general came, you see, all the walking wounded had to stand up and all the other ones that weren't had to stay in their beds in the cots, call them cots in American things, had to stay in the bed. So anyway, he come up and top sergeant or buck sergeant, which is three up, three down, American, came along and I got my bandages on that and it pins something on me thing, you know, nameplate or something like that, put it on there. And he's going along, he's putting them all on there. And, well, this was going on and then suddenly they said, right, you can sit down on the side of your beds, all you lot, sort of with bandages on. Those that can see what's happening, just stay where you are. Anyway, when the general come, well, he's preceded by a couple